Now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. I talked to him a little bit before the meeting. He is from Fresno. His name is Ben, and he has 14 years sober. Right? I was asking, you know, something favorite for them from the book or a saying. You know, everybody has their own little thing. And so for him, it's principle before personality, but principle behind the self. So please help me welcome Ben from Fresno.
All right. Again, I'm Ben. I'm an alcoholic. I grew up in this little town. I'm from Fresno, but I'm not from Fresno. I grew up in this little town called Lompoc, out on the coast. It's not far. You guys know where it is. Growing up, I hated that place. It was small. I always thought I was too big for it. You know, I was going to get out. I was going to go do something else. I don't know what I was going to do, but I was getting out of there. And I was born to a guy who was in the Air Force, because Vandenberg Air Force Base is right next to Lompoc. You're either in prison or you're an Air Force guy. I got the latter. And my old man was one of those guys. You know, he was an alcoholic. He was what I was going to compare myself to, you know. I wasn't an alcoholic, as long as I wasn't like that guy. My old man, he managed to retire. He had 20 years in the Air Force. He was that old sergeant that sat back there in the supply warehouse, and this was a long time ago in the military, you know, and they let his old drunk butt sit back there and just go ahead and go out to pasture and retire, you know. At home, if you've ever seen the movie, What's Love Got to Do with It, Ike Turner, that was my dad. You could always tell, you know, he'd be drinking, and that face would start to frown up, and you knew it was about to go. My mom, she's an immigrant, she's from France, and she's a good codependent, which was perfect for a young and upcoming alcoholic and addict like myself. A little on my mom, you know, when I finally had said enough is enough, and I said, hey, look, Mom, I said, I'm starting to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, I can't do this anymore. She's like, are you sure you're an alcoholic? I was like, come on, who are we fooling, you know? You remember those little $20 bills that were missing out of your purse, you know? You remember me showing up at your door at 4 in the morning, you know, with just a pair of jeans? Come on. The earmarks were there, you know. But my mom, she likes to see what she wants to see, you know. So anyway, you know, my old man would get to that point, and my mom would set it off. She'd irritate him enough to where he'd jump up and it'd explode, you know. And that's how I kind of grew up. I got, you know, good at watching for things, and if you ever grew up in an alcoholic household, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So I told myself, you know, that's not how I'm ever going to be. I made it for quite a while, you know. I went to elementary school and all that other stuff, you know, and I guess all right, you know, I never got the best of grades, I never really thought it was important. But somewhere around maybe sophomore year in high school, I was kind of a late bloomer is when I really started, you know. I can remember being 11, and I remember some older kids were like, hey, let's smoke some pot, you know, and I was like, oh, no, you know, my dad's an alcoholic, I'm not doing that stuff, and they said, you know, well, you'll be smoking pot by high school, but I said, well, let's get started early so I don't, you know, I can beat the rush. I like to be early, and it was never that big a thing, you know, kind of intermittent thing, every now and again to be cool, you know, to show the older kids I was all right. But it wasn't that big a deal. But I think it was somewhere around sophomore year in high school that I was on the wrestling team and wrestling. And I didn't realize there was a lot of earmarks to my disease, but I can see it now. Wrestling is one of those sports. It's an individual sport you do as a team, which is perfect for an alcoholic, right? Because I like to be a part of, but not really a part of. And so that was a perfect sport for me. And we drank a lot of beer. And, you know, that was always the lubricant, you know what I mean? You go to a party, you drink a little beer, and then everything just seems kind of cool. You know, you want some of this? Sure. Oh, by the way, what is it? That way you can prepare yourself, you know. It's LSD. Cancel all appointments in the next 24 hours. But, you know, I'd always ask after the fact. You know, that should be another earmark of my disease, you know. I do now and think later. So, I started drinking a lot in high school, you know. I decided that maybe I'd pass on some deals, you know, to friends, and I got dabbled a little bit in the, you know, the drug, the pharmaceutical trade as a favor to my friends. But, you know, it was always that drinking, you know, it was always drinking that kind of inspired the other stuff that went along with it, you know. Well, high school came to an end, an abrupt end, and somehow I managed to graduate, you know, and I kind of kicked it for a couple of years. And you know, it was a lot of partying, you know, you're starting to really go downhill, you know. And I think the end for me kind of came one time, you know, I was down in L.A., and I'm making this, and I know this is AA, if you got a problem, call your sponsor, they'll hug you and get you through it, you know, but this is how I got here. I'm in L.A. and I'm making this drug deal, and we're starting to get into, like, kind of significant amounts of drugs, you know, and there's guns involved, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, wow, what started out as getting high with my friends has now become this, you know, life and death thing, you know what I mean? We might shoot it out tonight, I don't know, you know? And how did I get here, you know? I mean, how did it get this far? How did it get this serious, you know? It hadn't been that long, like, you know, it felt like, you know? So anyway, as my higher power does love me, I just didn't know it at the time, a friend of mine came back, he had joined the military, you know, and he comes back and he says, hey, you know, you look kind of strung out. And I said, that's really weird, man, because I'm really strung out. And he goes, look around, man. And Lombok's one of those small places. We all kind of grew up together. We all kind of know each other. It's kind of like a family thing, you know? And he goes, looking around at all your friends, man. He goes, everybody's doing bids, aren't they? You know? And I was like, yeah, so-and-so got some time. So-and-so got some time. So-and-so. He goes, so how long before you get yours, you know? And I don't do confinement real well, which is funny because I joined the Navy, which is a lot of confinement. But I just didn't realize it. They got really good recruiters. They're like jail. But, you know, he said, you know, if you want to avoid that cage time, man, you might want to think about doing the military. And looking back, that was my first geographical, you know, first big geographical. So I said, okay, the military is going to straighten me out. And really what it did was there was a lot of guys like me that went to a recruiter that were kind of running out of places to go and things to do and places to live and joined, you know. And another earmark of my disease is that I joined the Navy. And out of all the military anthems, the one that contains the line, drink to the foam, happens to be the Navy. And that's the one I picked. And I drank to the foam. And drugs are frowned upon, so I did not do them. But I just upped my alcohol, you know. I just upped the next available drug. And I drank a lot. After I sobered up, I got to look back. I went through a lot of, they give you evaluations in the military, you know, and I started looking at these things. And they all kind of had the same kind of theme to them. They said, this guy's a really good, he's a technical expert. He's really good at his job. But then down at the bottom it says, he goes out and gets in a fist fight. He comes back in handcuffs. He can't handle being out in public too well, you know. And I was a really good sailor. I was a crappy citizen, you know. I can remember, you know, them. I don't know if you guys know them. They were always going to try me. I wasn't going to have it, you know. I'm kind of a tough guy, right? So they are not going to try me. You know, somebody on active duty, I got this 38 in the console because they might try me, you know. And I think, wow, you know, if I pulled that trigger, man, I was on active duty, that would have been... It would have been pretty bad, you know. But that's where the alcohol takes me. You know what I mean? It makes me believe things, you know. And later on in the story, I'll kind of explain more, you know. But I learned that my behaviors, whether I was drinking or not, were still dictated by my disease. And by that I mean that, you know, we'd be underway, and I wasn't one of those guys that drank at sea, you know. But you cut me off in the chow line, I'm punching them out. And we're going at it. You know, they're like, what's your problem? Well, I didn't realize that a lot of these isms that come with, you know, the alcoholism that I'll explain later, manifest themselves whether I'm drinking or not. You know, it's just the way my head is wired at that time, you know. And sober is really not sober. It just means I had to plug in the jug, you know. So I go through about 10 years, you know, in the service like this, you know, I drink, I get in trouble, I drink, I get in trouble. But I never really commit that cardinal sin. In the military, you know, it's pretty much a DUI is going to kill you, you know. But I always avoided those, you know, but I was always, you know, if I look back, there was always someone telling me, you know, you got to watch your drinking, man, you got to watch your drinking. It's, you know, it's out of hand, you know. But I never got into this, and I'm one of those guys, I didn't ever get into enough trouble to make it worth my while to quit. Well, things started getting to a head, you know. My drink was getting out of hand, my lifestyle was getting out of hand. I didn't even feel like I was really in the Navy anymore, and I was getting out. And what happened was I started going to school for a little bit, to a junior college, and I met this guy who was a correctional officer, and he told me to make $120,000 a year. Now at the time, Keystone was like $5 a 12 pack. So I'm like, let's see, $120,000 a year, $5 a 12 pack, that's a lot of beer. More than they pay me in the Navy. I'll go do that. So I was on my way. I was going to do that. You know, I told the Navy, here's my paperwork. I'm out. I'm not around here no more. You guys can't match that, you know. And I was probably like 30 days from, you know, calling it quits. I had done 10 years, and I was going to call it quits. And I found myself at home, drunk, and I was crying, you know. And I knew that I couldn't maintain the lifestyle that I had in the Navy as a civilian. I knew that part. I said, I can't go out there every day and watch these inmates and reek like alcohol, because every day that was kind of a topic, you know, at work, was, you smelled like a 12-pack. And I was like, well, that's weird, because last night I drank a 12-pack. And it was an everyday occasion for me, you know, and I was really scared because I wasn't sure how I was going to scan my way through that, you know, and it was going to be a big change, and I was really scared, you know, but I didn't stop drinking, you know, I just drank more to make myself feel better. Well, those 30 days start to get less and less, you know. I can't remember exactly when, but it's one of the last times that they call it duty. I had duty, and I told a guy, you know, I was like, look, if something happens, you give me a call, I'll be at the house. But I didn't go to the house. I decided to get in my vehicle, and I was pretty drunk, and I was leaving the base. And the only way to get out of NAS Lemoore back then was, there was these like half crescent like things that separated the lanes. And I'm driving up to this thing, and I think what I was doing was, I can't remember. I was messing with the CD player to find my theme song, because I like to leave the base with theme music. And I hit one of those crescents, and I hit this pickup truck, and I got it kind of lifted, and so I caught it just right to where the truck goes up, flies through the air, turns to the side, I hit the car shack with my tailgate, and I go sliding down the road. Turn the transmission out of the truck, the oil pan, I separate a bunch of fuel lines. I catch the truck on fire. Well, at this point, the passenger side is the only thing that's still intact, because I hit the driver's side, and some clown climbs up on my truck and breaks the passenger window, which is the only thing still missing on that side. I was like, well, you know, hey, you know. He goes, get out of the truck. He goes, it's on fire. I go, hold on a minute, I'm looking for my cigarettes. So because that's a priority to me, I'm an alcoholic. So I knew I was going to need one to calm my nerves. So I grab my cigarettes and I crawl out of this truck. And I said, don't worry about it, I'll catch a light on the way out. I land down on the ground, and I yelled an F word, because I remember thinking that. I was like, golly, you know? I said, I'm going to be in a lot of trouble. This little dude's over there writing everything down. I'm like, what are you doing? You know, this is candid banter. Don't write all this stuff down. I'd have to explain all these little things later to this captain. I was like, shh. But, they blow me right there, and that's always, you know, the alcoholic answer. You know, you want to do a blood test, or, you know, you want the breathalyzer. Why don't you blow me? But which doesn't help the situation any, you know. And you guys are laughing, but he wasn't. So I blow this .28, and again, I'm a really smart alcoholic, right? So I blow it .28, and the guy goes, holy crap. He goes, I can't believe it. You're blowing a .28, and you're standing there on your feet talking to me. I go, I can't believe I wrecked that truck, because I've been way drunker going through the gate. I shouldn't tell you this, huh? I should back this up. I've never been drunker than this. Write you down again. So, they weren't too happy, and when all the dust kind of settled, what happened was, they said, look, you don't have enough time left. We cannot process you, you know what I mean? But you're getting out. Now, that little job that you thought you had with the Department of Corrections, because I kind of like a shoe in at that point, they go, that's gone. Because now you got a DUI under your belt, you know, they're not going to take it. I was going through a divorce at the time, because that's another story in itself. I got tired of being married, and I had a girlfriend. So, well, she didn't understand me, but the girlfriend did. It works out that way sometimes. And so, you know, I'm kind of going through this divorce. I'm about to get kicked out of the Navy. And I had this Master Chief, you know, and I got to excuse me, maybe a little bit of a wuss. Hard to talk about, but he stood up for me, you know. He said, I can keep you in. He said, because right now, you're looking at getting out with no benefits, no nothing. You know, everything you earned, the little benefits, they're done because of the way you're going to get out. Because of this DUI, you eradicated all those. The GI Bill, the medical, all of it's gone. And he said, you're going through a divorce, you're going to need something, man. So I said, all right. So he convinced me to stay in, which was crazy, because I think I had like 12 hours left on the clock, and this guy pushed a lot of paperwork. And he believed in me enough that he stood in front of his captain on the base. And he told him I was salvageable. And it kind of touched my heart because no one's ever really, defended me like that before. You know, he stuck his neck out on the line for a guy like me. And I'm thinking, you're betting on a losing horse here, brother, because I don't know, the only trick is to stay in. I got to not drink anymore. I'm like, can we do something else? What if I did this jumping jack until I throw up or something? I don't want to really give up the whole booze thing, But that was going to be one of the terms of my conditions for staying, So, I say, now a lot of guys, what they do is when they re-enlist, they get like a, what they call a 96-hour special liberty. It's like a days off, you get all sorts of stuff, like a cool pen from the Navy, you get all this stuff. I got 45 days in Navy jail. I was like, man, signing this, I'm really going to go into lockup? They're like, yeah, for 45. I was like, man, dude. But before I went, being a smart guy, I started going to AA meetings a little more. Because I thought, before I went to go see that skipper, I needed something under my belt. I know how to scam when I need to scam. So I figured if I picked up just enough of your little phrases, I could get myself out of trouble. Hey, have you learned your lesson? Oh, yeah, I think, and I take it one day at a time. Good to go, And so I started meeting people at these meetings, Well, anyway, the skipper sentenced me to these 45 days of lockup. I get this visitor one Wednesday. I don't have any visitors except for this little girlfriend. Like I said, and I used to see my ex-wife driving by when he flipped me off. I'm starting to lose my train of thought. So this guy from the meeting would come in and visit me, and I'm like, dude, seriously, you quit drinking this? All you got to do is come visit some guy, some convict in lockup? Oh my God, But he talked to me about the program, and he talked to me about staying sober. And I think about that a lot too, about how that guy gave up a lot of his free time to come speak to me, and I maybe thought I had, a chance at this, So, I get done, I do 45 days, I'm mad, I'm pissed off, I don't like being incarcerated, and the next phase is that they send me to rehab, and I'm like, okay, wasn't locked up enough, that was 45 days of my life, dude, now you want to send me on another 30 days in rehab, I don't really, I'm not with it, but I got, hey, part of the terms, man, I got to do it, I got to jump through the hoop. So they sent me down, and it was miserable. Of all the places I had to go to rehab, I had to go to Point Loma, San Diego. Miserable place. 75 degrees, all you can eat, nice and warm, ocean breeze. I was like, man, if this is rehab, sign me up forever. I'll do this for the rest of my time. But, I learned a lot. I think that was the first time that I got honest. I had a counselor ask me, they said, what's the longest you've ever been sober? If you can remember. And I said, oh, that's easy. I said, 75 days, I didn't drink. And they're like, and what was the conditions? I said, in the Navy, what they call when you're running along a foreign coast is line time. Well, it was whatever they call 75 days of line time. They were like, well, that was in, not when you're forced to, but when you just do it on your own. I was like, oh, okay, well, then probably 6 hours. And I got honest with him, I said, yeah, I any chance I get to drink, I drink. As soon as they drop that brow in a foreign port, I'm off and I'm drinking, that's my MO. So, rehab was, for what I thought it was going to, not be a good experience, it turned out to be a really good experience because I learned a lot, I learned about the physiological effects, I understood now why whether I drank a 40 the night before or a 12-pack the night before, my liver was done processing, it didn't have enough. So I was always leaking of alcohol, I understood that now from, rehab. As much as I didn't want to go because I thought they were going to bore me, the first thing I did when I got there, besides get my linens, they gave me Living Sober, the big book, and the 12x12. I'm like, oh, I know this thing. I know this, I know AA because that one loser used to come all the time on Wednesdays to visit me in lockup. But to get out, and because I don't have a license now for like a year, I jump on that 15-passenger van, and go all over San Diego. And San Diego has like, 450 a night or something like that, meetings. Always something. It got me out of the lockup, man. I got to get in the van and go to a meeting, and I listened, I guess it started to grow on me a little bit. Someone that was in with me out of the group, we started making friends in rehab. They happened to live not far away because they were stationed there in San Diego. And they said, hey, why don't everybody come back to my apartment? Because we had like one of these weekends where we could kind of like hang ourselves with enough rope if we wanted to go get in trouble, we could. They let us loose. And so we went to their apartment. And they were all pretty much dedicated to staying sober. And I remember we were playing Monopoly. And I hit Park Place and I hit Boardwalk and I had boats. I had hotels. And I'm laughing. And it occurred to me that that was the first time, with nothing in my system, that I laughed in earnest. You know? When I drink, when I use, I'll laugh at you. I'll get my amusement out of you. I'll hurt you. I'll make fun of you. I'll belittle you. And that'll make me laugh. You know what I mean? But this was the first time I had a really good time just doing something with some other people. And it wasn't at anybody's expense. I get to rehab, and I come back, you know, and I'm light of rank, because they kind of took that too. Like I said, they're pretty pissed. And they gave me orders, you know, and it wasn't the orders I wanted. They said, you're going to Washington. Better back up the story, I was going through this divorce, which was pretty, you know, pretty sure. And, when I was doing the AA thing, you know, in the beginning, I remember, you know, I come in and I'm hard-headed. I don't really think I need AA. I just want to do it enough to get out of trouble and get back to my life if I know it. And this guy's sitting down and he's trying to tell me about how my life is unmanageable. And I'm like, no, man, my life is totally manageable. I was like, for one, I'm in trouble with the Navy, so my time is managed. They got me down on this itinerary. I know where I'm going to be. They're letting me know. I said, also, Kings County Probation, they got me in an itinerary too. So I'm cool. My life is managed. Believe me, I don't have to do nothing. I've already got it written out. And they said, well, you know, what about your personal life? I said, well, I'm going through a divorce. You know, so the Navy wants me out. My wife wants me out. My girlfriend wants me in. Everything's cool. I'm used to the chaos, man, so those things are normal, you know? So anyway, I start to realize after rehab and after these meetings that my life is unmanageable, you know? And that I don't do things so good, left to my own accord. I get orders, and like I said, my higher power loves me today, you know? And I realize it because things happen in my life that I don't want to believe that they're God, but they kind of made themselves evident. You know, it's that weird stuff. It's that weird coincidence and stuff. To backtrack a little bit, when I was on restriction, when I was in a little Navy jail, this guy comes through, and he goes, hey, he goes, you look really familiar to me. And he looked familiar to me, but, you know, he's a gendarme dude. I don't really want to say I know him, you know, but he pulls me into his office, and he says, you know, you served here? I was like, yeah, I did. And we know the same people. We were on the same ship. We partied in the same ports together. And he said, you know, I used to do all that stuff. He said, but I've accepted Christ into my heart, you know. And he said, and I got sober. And I was like, no way, you know. And he had totally changed his life through the church and God, you know. But he asked me if I wanted to accept God. And I did that day. And we prayed. Now, the weird thing is, this guy was on these orders that I've never seen in the Navy before. 20 years, man, I've never seen it. He had the wrong orders. He was gone within 3 days, and really I took over. But I think, you know, my higher power does that kind of stuff. He put this guy into my life that I was going to go with because I knew him. Because he validated himself with people that I knew. That's how I operate. You know, if I know you and I know fewer people, then we're cool. That got me into the higher power just a little bit, you know. I wish, like I said, I embraced this thing from the beginning, but I didn't. I'd like all you newcomers to know that I was hard-headed in the beginning, and I took the hard road to get here. So, I get out of rehab, and I'm trying to do the AA thing. I heard 90 meetings in 90 weeks is what I heard. And so... So I think I chose like a Tuesday meeting to go to once a week because I didn't want to interfere with Monday night football or baseball. I want to, you know, I'm out of shoes. I'll give up Tuesday. And things aren't really going better for me. They wanted me to get a sponsor. I took a coffee pot romance instead. I thought that would be better since we were both in recovery. And, you know, and nothing's more sweet than the coffee pot romance, you know. You can't give something broken to somebody and expect it to work. Or as my friend says, two stickies don't make a welly, you know? Both of us got exactly like 15 minutes of sobriety, you know? We look across the room. I stare into her yellow jaundiced eyes, and she stares into my bloodshot red ones, and we know this is love. Shit didn't work out. Went horrible. Most of the fights ended up with, you call your sponsor. No, you call your sponsor. Yeah, what step is that? So, trying to work each other's program doesn't work that well either, you know? I kind of backtrack that story, but anyway, I get out of rehab, and the Navy sends me to, of all places, Washington State. I'm like, I can't go to Washington State, man. I said, I'm still kind of going through a divorce. I still got custody battles I'm fighting, and I need to see my kids. This is all about me, dude. I'm not going to Washington. They're like, dude, you messed up. You don't got a choice anymore. You know, your days of calling your own shots are over. You're doing what we tell you. You're going to Washington. Again, my higher power loves me. What it did was, it took me out of the distraction, because I love combat. I love it. So when she wants to fight about stuff, when she wants to fight about a car, a house, the kids' visitation, I'm in all the way. I will battle you until the, you know. But like I said, I got sober originally in 1999, but I had to take a black flag penalty like in NASCAR because I was kind of cheating the system a little bit, you know? And that'll come in a few minutes. But anyway, so this is like 1999, 2000. Cell phones are not as popular as they are today. So I end up going to Washington, and all I got is a payphone at the end of the pier. But I'm still fighting about child custody, because I don't know why I'm three states away, but I'm going to argue about, you know, child custody and the divorce and how much you owe me and how much blah, blah, blah. And that's the beauty of it, you know, because you can't fight over a payphone. I'll be the first to tell you. You know what I mean? I'm in there, and I'm like, no, F you. Please deposit 75 cents. I'm like, what? You know, so I'm trying to put the money in the thing and keep my argument going and keep my current spot, you know? And it goes disastrous after that, you know? And then I run out of pocket change. You know, you wait half an hour. I'm going to bring some money, and then I'll be back. What ended up happening is I didn't have all those outside distractions. For me, it put me in where I had to be. You know, I sat in this barracks room, and I went through that phone book, and I found Alcoholics Anonymous in the white pages, and I called, and I said, I am here. I don't know the area. Where are you? And they showed me where the meeting was, right around the corner from the base. And I ain't fighting about no divorce, man. I'm not fighting about no visitation. I'm up there by myself. And that was the first time I went to a meeting, and I got honest, and I said, look, I'm up here. I don't got any adult supervision, and I need your help, you know? And this guy, he kind of tricked me. We went outside, he had the 68 LeSabre. We were talking about Pontiacs and the 350 and the way the distributor works. And next thing he goes, I'll be your sponsor. And I was like, whoa, that was kind of smooth. We did the whole car thing, and then you got me to, you know, trust me, though, you're my sponsor. And that was another good thing. He taught me a lot. You know, he took me through the 12 steps because I told him, look, I'm fast approaching the time when I'm going on cruise. And for me, maybe cruises are the worst time because I get overseas and I don't know how to act. I'm not a good ambassador in my country. And he started getting me through the steps. You know, and I learned about how my life is unmanageable. You know, I am powerless over alcohol. You know, I started learning, like we talked about, I learned that there's principles behind those steps. There's, you know, honesty. It's in the big book. You have to look it up. I'm not giving you no freebies tonight. But you look it up, and there's principles behind every step. Principles before personality. Today, I try to use it as a checklist. You know, am I being tolerant? Am I being understanding? Am I being loving? Half the time, no. You cut me off on the freeway, I'm not very understanding or tolerant at all. I got to make that amends later. You know? But, I started trying to work that program. The guy got me into doing service. He got me on the right path, you know, and I wish I could say that, you know, I did it right the whole time. I learned. I made my mistakes. I think if there's, trying to catch the timer. I think if there's one thing that happened up there that was the most magic is that me and these dudes are now going to meetings up there in Washington now, and I kind of went through my steps, and I met a guy, and he likes Harley Davidson just as much as I like Harley Davidson. And me, him, and another guy named, well, it's not his, what his name was, but we were in stair-step recovery. It was like 1, 2, 3, and 4 years, you know, all of us. And we all like riding bikes, we all like hanging out, and what we do is we go to meetings, and then we go work on bikes, we go work on cars, we go eat, and we talk. And we talk because we all had the same amount of sobriety. And we all hated the old-timers as much as the next guy, you know? Because when you're new, old-timers are full of shit. So, we talk, you know? And we talk about real things that happen to alcoholics. I remember telling my friend, you know, I said, man, my kid's got these report cards, man. It's ridiculous. You know, it's nothing but F. And I remember looking at me and going, is it your report card? No. He goes, yeah, it's on him, brother. You know what I mean? And I learned a lot about parenting through this guy, you know, and we bounced a lot of things off each other, you know. And if you hang out with people in the program, you know, if you really want to know whether what you're thinking is ridiculous or not, just ask them, because they'll laugh at you. They won't tell you how silly it sounds. I remember hanging out at his house one time, and he had these newspaper clippings. And the interesting thing, he had this whole shoebox full. He goes, I know it's kind of macabre. He goes, not everybody can see this. He goes, but these small little newspaper clippings, all these people that were in AA, this guy talked to everybody, man. Small amount of people that died in the program, and they died sober. They had a big stack of people that he had met in the program. He said, you remember this dude? Yeah, I kind of remember that dude. Yeah, he went back out, man. He died later. This guy died. This guy died. He had this big stack. So, Billy made it to about 8.5 years, and he got pulmonary fibrosis, and he ended up passing away, and he went to the little stack, you know? He lived his life sober, he lived it by the program, and he died by the program. I learned that from him, too. I learned that making friends in this program can save your ass. I have a lot of friends that are from back home, you know, guys I grew up with, and we're cool. We're not as cool as the people that I got sober with. And I probably know the people that I got sober with a lot better than some guys I've known 30 years, you know, because from where I come from, guys don't talk like that, you know. We don't hang out in the garage and talk about our feelings. Or you're not going to get an invite back if you do. But, we talked about our feelings. We talked about our frustrations. We talked about our fears. You know, and I know a lot of these guys in recovery inside and out because they let me in on that part of it. You know, we didn't have to keep up that macho facade. I kind of condensed my story down because I was kind of running out of time. But I think if I want to leave you with anything, you know, it's that don't give up. I think that this is a self-correcting program, and if you just come in and put your butt in that chair, eventually things are going to happen. They will happen if you just keep coming back to the meetings, you know. And not to cause blasphemy, you know, but I've never really heard nobody say, hey, I didn't work a good 4-step, I didn't work a good 7-step, I went back out. What I always hear is that I quit going to those meetings, I quit hanging out with those people, I went back to what I know. My default setting, like a computer, you know, when I go back to default setting, my default setting is like, I have to reverse my touch. What I touch turns to crap. When I do things my way, they don't work out so good. I haven't done this. This last 14 years has been gone. Because left to my own devices, I would fuck this up. The program kind of taught me that I need you guys. I used to not need anybody, but I need you. I need the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's what keeps me going. It's what keeps me honest. And if I doesn't kill, I thank you for your attention, and it was great sharing with you. Thank you.